You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, as they like to say. This is Colombia Calling, episode 224. Yes, we're in my back garden again. No, there's an absence of barking dogs today, but I can promise that at some point a dog will bark, because this is the nature of the beast here on the Colombia Calling podcast. And yes, I mentioned to you last week when we were talking to Danny Concha, the Anglo-Peruvian guy who's out there making his short documentary series and stuff called Cuentos Colombianos, I mentioned that we'd be having an interesting person on this week's show. So yes, episode 224 is dedicated to the writer, the author, Juan Fernando Incapié. He's Bogotano. I say that, but we'll get into that in a minute. He's Bogotano. He's an author. I've had the very special opportunity to get an early copy of his book called Mother Tongue, A Bogotan Story. I read it. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I recommend it to you guys out there. But we're going to talk about it. Let's explore it, because it is a story about Bogota and life in Bogota. But let's hear a little bit about Juan Fernando to begin with. So, Juan Fernando, welcome on Columbia Calling.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
No, it's a great pleasure to have you here. I always like getting authors on. I had Pacheco on some months ago. Her
Julian
book,
Pacheco.
Julian Pacheco was on.
I want to translate that.
Oh, really?
She's awesome.
Well, her, I mean, she was great talking to her. I've had, obviously, the Bogota writers. I've had Tom Feiling, who's written his book about Providencia and Short Walks from Bogota. You can translate that, too. Okay. All of these people, you know, like we've try and get people on, authors big and small, but you are let's say a rising name in the literary genre here in Bogota and in Colombia. You are known, people know your name, and this is a Bogota book. But let's start with the basics. It's a book in English. I mean, you know, as far as I understand, this is the first book in Colombia to be written and published in English of its type.
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, it's always good to be the first. It sounds a bit like Colombia is like, you know, we've got the tallest trees, we've got the deepest ocean, we've got the best ports, but this is the first book, Mother Tongue. Now, did you write this, I have to ask, because there's parts of it that are based in Houston, Texas, and then obviously I would say the majority of it in Bogota, but did you write it from Houston, thinking of Bogota?
Well, I was in Houston when I wrote it. I quit a PhD I was studying, mm-hmm. because I just wanted to write. And this is the first interview that I get, because the book just came out. So I was sure everyone was going to ask me, why did you write a book in English?
Of course.
But the idea is that I have no idea why. I just follow my instincts, you know. I was writing at first. I had in mind what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. and I started scribbling in Spanish. But then one day it hit me, why not in English? Do it in English. Because the tone seems a bit similar with my first book, which is called Gringadas. I brought your copy here.
Oh, thank you.
So I don't want to do the same. I don't feel comfortable doing the same. I think you need to try new things. So one day I said, okay, let's try this in English. I start writing in English, and I just never stopped till the end. But I don't have an answer as to why. I didn't have it prepared or anything. It's just instinct told me.
It's not a purely financial thing. It's the lucrative Anglo market. But of course, you're publishing it in Colombia. I mean, so...
Yeah, I was probably thinking about that. At the time, I was trying to publish my first novel, which is Gramática Pura. Mm-hmm. The first edition is about to run out. It's like a grammar manual told by a by an unbearable Bogotana that is correcting everyone all the time, called Emilia Restrepo Williamson. And I was trying to publish that in Colombia, and it was hard, you know.
Yeah.
Just a few minutes ago, it's hard to do things here, and when you try to get a book published, it's hard. I was talking to several printing houses, and they were saying yes, and then no, and mm-hmm. yes. So probably that had to do with the choice of me writing in English.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking very naively that this is going to be easy to publish in the U.S.
Mm.
And then I found myself hitting a wall, because you need an agent there. So I wrote to agents, like, I don't know, 100 emails. No one ever answered me. So this was frustrating. And then I came to Bogota. Rey Naranjo decided to publish Gramática Pura. And I presented my editor,
mm-hmm.
like a list of publications that I want to, of books that I want to write or have written, like on 10-year publication. Mm-hmm. And this book was right after Gramática Pura, which I think is a good continuity. Like, it gives continuity. You write a manual grammar with a story behind it, and then a book in English, and then I convinced my editor.
Wes?
I think it had to do with the fact that we were drinking.
But you got him to sign something then. I mean, the back of a napkin in a bar.
Exactly. So afterwards, he just couldn't say no to me. I was too happy.
So was it too much guaro, too much ron, or too much poker?
It was poker, I think.
Okay. Well, like you say in the book, poker, drink poker, have friends.
Exactly,
But fascinating. Now, Gramática Pura, which I haven't read, I have to admit. So you said it's about this lady, Elvira?
Emilia,
and she's got that English last name, Williamson, so of course she thinks she's better than everybody else.
Yeah.
You said that name out loud just now, and it appealed to me, because I know, of course, of Colombians with the double barrel, you know, Fernandez, but then, you know, it's like Williamson or Donaldson or something
so
of those,
yeah.
McAllister or something like that. So that's very, so of course, they're Sepa, you know, they probably date back, their genealogy tree to the conquistadors and then Bolivar's legion and everything else.
Something like that, yes.
Is that a version of like the book that came out in English, Eats, Shoots and Leaves? Have you heard about that book?
I haven't heard.
Okay, but it's a very amusing book about grammar and how it needs to be done well. Not like a pedant, but it needs to be done well.
Well, Emilia is a little pedant,
okay.
But she's also like really funny, because she's talking about her life in the last 10 years, and she's also mentioning all this grammar information,
mm-hmm.
but it made sense, like she's giving a class or something.
Okay, well, I'm going to be sure to look that up. And of course, now, before we get into the crux of talking about mother tongue, you're launching it at the book fair. The Feria del Libro.
Yeah, that's right, in Bilbao. I just look at the program, and I think it's going to be, for sure, Saturday, April 28th at 2 p.m. on Salón Madre Josefa del Castillo. So
okay.
You are more than welcome to join us there.
Excellent. That's very exciting. Now, so those of you, I know most of my listeners who are here in the country or coming to the country will be attending Filbo, because it's one of the great events in Bogota. I mean, annual events. It's one of the great things to come and do. So Saturday, April the 28th, 2 p.m., you'll see Juan Fernando Incapié, their mother tongue. Of course, there'll be a whole crowd, a gaggle of people clamoring for autographs. Will you do a reading?
Yeah, we're talking to the presenters that I think are going to be Juan Esteban Constain and also a Chicano writer called Daniel Chacon, who is going to come here. He works at UTEP, where I went to school, University of Texas at El Paso. He's the head of the creative writing department, and he's coming. Their department is coming, and I think he's going to be there with
us. Nice. So they can give you the introduction.
Yeah.
Because, of course, he wrote you up a nice blurb on the back Daniel Chacon. Funny, intelligent, and at times postmodern, this Bogotan story is also a page-turner, compelling and a pleasure to read. The characters we meet are real and weird and interesting. This book is a great introduction to Incapié's work in the U.S., a writer who has already earned his place in the Colombian literary world. Higher praise you couldn't receive, is the truth.
I have to buy him pokers.
Multiple pokers there. But so, now, the first things first, I'm going to go through this. The first couple of chapters that I read, you know, it reads very easily, which again is a testament to great writing. You know, I'm not sort of James Joycing it and having to go back and read it again and read it again. But the first couple of chapters, when you're talking about Kelly and Frida, the main sort of, let's say, protagonists or supporting actresses, better said, I feel like I'm reading Bukowski a little bit. So again, for me, that's high praise because I like a bit of Bukowski.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like, but you're not as much as a Barfly like thing. You're not actually sort of let's say, although there are moments of vomit, but you're not actually sort of down and out. You're kind of a student and a teacher and, you know, just living life really and getting into scrapes. So with that in mind, I have to ask if there's anything autobiographical in this novel.
Well, yes and no. Uh-huh. It's definitely fiction. I mean, that has to be clear. Mm. It's fiction. I made it up. But the way I write, I just take things that can happen or sort of happen, and then I write around them. You know, it doesn't mean that it's autobiographical in any sense. But I remember, for instance, how I was feeling at a point, and I tried to describe that. But yeah, it has nothing to do with my life.
Okay. Otherwise, I was a bit worried having you here in my home.
Yeah.
And then you were going to take this experience and then crucify me in the next piece or something, you know? Because, it feels humorous. I have to say, it is very funny, especially the observations on Bogota and Colombia are incredibly astute. I think I can say that after 11 years here. But it feels like there's an axe to grind a little bit. You get some weight off your chest, or the character does. So, but I think that we all have complained about these things. You complain a little bit about the weather. You complain about the transport, about it being difficult to do things and so on, and some descriptions in there, and it feels like it's like, oh, you know, it must have been somewhat cathartic writing this.
Well, writing, it's supposed to be cathartic, you know, and but once you are writing, especially a novel, from my experience, I mean, I'm not gonna say it's easy because it's not, but it takes more. It's endurance. Mm-hmm. If you work every day for a couple of months or something, you'll get it. So you need more persistence, really, than any other thing. Yeah, but as I was like reflecting on my city, and because I'm from here and middle class, I'm no rich kid or anything. It's hard to love a place like this if you are not born here. Mm-hmm. Somehow you get attached sentimentally to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I like Bogota. I love it here, but it's a nightmare also. Sometimes, man, it's like, wow, my God! I just wanna, like, doing the most simple errand will suck away your youth, your life, your wallet, everything. It's just frustrating. I remember once I was living in El Paso, Texas, and in the street I parked my car. I needed a permit, like, to hang up on the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to do that errand.
Yeah.
Like any Colombian, I'm afraid of errands. I feel like I remember I talked to my boss at the university. I said, man, I'm going to need the whole morning because I need to do this. Okay. And he said, yeah, sure. And I went 8 a.m. and the errand was done at 8:05. Yeah. I walk out of there with my paper. This just doesn't happen, or it didn't happen in my life until that point. To run an errand in Bogota, you need the whole day.
And in triplicate.
And you need your...
Notarized.
Notarized. And I don't know if you know what the SECOP is. I'm dealing with that right
What's
now.
What's the SECOP?
Well, it's great that you don't know. You're a happy, lucky man. When you have contracts with the state or with the city, you need to go through that. It's nightmare, man. It's like... Please.
Well, I'm dealing with my predial at the moment.
No, so. It's a
cake. I've worked out that I can now pay it in installations and not at one time. So I'm like, oh, thank God. Yeah. You know, it's like, no, but I mean, it's true. Only yesterday I walked down to, because I couldn't, for some reason or other, make any payments online. I think Bancolombia had collapsed and stuff for a few days. And so I went down to the Baloto place just down the hill to pay it. And the guy just didn't want to take the payment. He just didn't want to do it. He goes, no, I linear. And I could see that was linear. You know, he just didn't want to do it. It's like, all right, I'll just go around the corner. Of course, and right round the corner, if there was no linear for him, there shouldn't have been for the next place. You know, it's like, and they took it straight away. But this guy, always, I always know he doesn't want to take the payment.
Which is hard because yeah. we are usually pretty nice to foreigners. Yeah. And you look pretty Anglo.
So, yeah, I'm pretty blanco, pretty gringo.
So that's a weird one.
Thing is, in this area, you know, we're not so exotic anymore. You know, Chapinero Alto has become a Gringolandia, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've noticed. Like 20 years ago, there were no foreigners in Colombia. I mean, you see the occasional Peruvian, Venezuelan, but now you just keep meeting gringos. Yeah.
We're still not on the levels of, you know, other South American capitals, but to compare it with how it used to be, yeah, Colombians always make, oh, there are so many now. It's like, well, yes, there are more. But in 98, when I was in Cali, and I went to the the festival, the Pacific music one, and people came up to talk to us, and then an American came over and goes, I haven't spoken English in like 3 weeks. Please, can I sit with you? You know, it's like, yeah, and that's what it used to be. And you know, you used to, I always say it on this show, you used to stop other Anglo-looking people on the street and say, hey, how's it going? You know, because you had that immediate common bond. And I was like, but now, I mean, especially in this area, it's like, oh, well, I mean, the Candelaria is another story altogether, but in this area, you get more long-term people, let's say.
Yeah. Probably in 20 years, Ciudad Bolívar will be still with it.
Yeah, maybe, if it gets connected to the rest of the city, but that's another story to talk about. Okay. As we wind down this first segment of the show, I mean, it's an interesting chat, and I know that, you know, I have a lot of aspiring writers, journalists, artists out there, And they'll be clamoring for me to ask at this point, can you make a living writing books here in Colombia?
No. Absolutely not.
There we go.
No. There are like a bunch of writers, probably 5 or 10, that live off their books in Colombia.
Vallejo,
yeah. Mario Mendoza, possibly now this girl, Amalia Andrade. Mm-hmm. They sell a lot.
Yeah.
And they sell outside the country, but yeah, I don't live off my book sales until now, because let's hope all of you buy Mother Tongue. It's only 32,000 pesos.
That's there you cheap. Go.
But you can live. I mean, a literary career, especially in a country like Colombia, takes a lot of time to build and persistence. Even if you name a writer that you don't like. Mm. I'm sure his work is as off for 10, 20 years. So probably they don't live off their books, but they can live off literature. You know,
yeah.
You go teach a class, you translate books like I do, you become the judge in literary contest. And it's not a great living, but you can survive. Right now, I survive off literature.
And you're doing what you want to be doing, and you love it.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's a happy message behind it.
Yeah, but still, if you want to buy a house or a car or have a family, those things get complicated.
Yeah, it's always complicated. Well, let me just tell you that. All right, well, this is episode 224 of Colombia Calling. We're talking to author Juan Fernando Incapié, and we're going to discuss in further depth his book, Mother Tongue, A Bogotan Story, which is being launched at the Filbo, the Feria del Libro de Bogotá, on April the 28th, 2 p.m. So be there. We're taking a short break, and we'll be back and talk further about this great and a very amusing book. So thank you for listening. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling, episode 224 with Juan Fernando Incapié. And we're talking about Mother Tongue. We've talked a little bit about sort of generalities of writing, about life in Colombia, life elsewhere in the first segment of this show. But now we're going to talk, let's talk about this book, because we're promoting this book. And so I was said in the last section, sort of pages 1 to 28 reminded me of Bukowski, and it was a bit of a flow of consciousness in there. But what I like most are your observations on Colombia and Bogota. I mean, that's the truth of it. And there are so many things that are true to form. And it cut quite close to the bone. I don't know. I mean, are Bogotanos going to find it funny? And I'll get to the examples. Or are they going to take it, you know, personally? Because it is one of these things is... Is you put in there that you know, Colombians or Bogotanos, I think, get upset if anyone else and foreigners, you know, criticize their city or Colombia in general. And you put it in the book, and I just found myself saying, this is like every Facebook forum out there for expats in Colombia. You complain about a long line, or you complain about the corruption, and you complain about the weather. And then some Colombian gets on there and goes, well, you could always leave, you know, I mean, that's what I find. So, I mean, this is, I want to explore this. I mean, is this going to hurt Colombians that you said it, that you've called them out on this?
Or? Well, I really don't care because that's not the mission of literature.
Yeah.
I point out these things that you mentioned and yeah, I noticed that. This happened to me also. I can complain as much as I like about Bogota and Colombia and whatever, everything that happens here. But if I see the same complaints exactly made by you, for instance, I immediately get upset.
Yeah.
What I conclude in the novel is just really juvenile.
Yeah.
It's kind of stupid, and it talks a lot about our complexes as a nation and the Colombian personality in general, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's hard. Mm-hmm. When you take the example of Bogota, still, you know, it's a mystery to me why they established this city as the capital, being far away from... If it's hard getting here nowadays, imagine what it was like 2 centuries ago. So, well, that's probably due to the beauty of the savannah of Bogota. But yeah, Bogotans are... We are like... I mean, people, when they come to Colombia, and especially to Bogota, they think that this is a sunny city, that there are beaches all over the place. That's the way Bogota is represented, like in movies or whatever.
Yeah,
and they found themselves with a surprise, with a little surprise. Yeah. But people here are, like, different from the rest of the country. Yeah. And this is a city made of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Colombia, I think, I mean, Bogota had, half a million people living in it in 1950, and now we have what, close to 10 million, or we overpassed that. So that's a whole phenomenon of what's been going on here. But yeah, it's probably I don't want to represent or take it upon me that this is how Colombians are. This is just one version of one novel. I'm not a politician or I'm just trying to sell books here and just entertain people, because that's another thing. We Colombians are very solemn, you know, especially when we talk about literature or the arts. And always, since I started reading, that gets on my nerves. Mm. Why so solemn? Where's the sense of humor?
Mm-hmm.
Literature is still so solemn, like as if when you try to speak of a book, you need to wear your tie and suit and talk to your tias. That's kind of bullshit to me.
It's the whole kind of Academia de Historia or Literatura. It almost feels something feudal handed down from the Spanish there. Only the right people can talk about literature, and they must only talk in this fashion. And you address that as well in the book, because you're sort of saying, it's like, where is the intermediary narrative between, and I would say, García Márquez, and between... who's the paisa who writes all the stuff about the Virgen de los Sicarios and stuff like that? What's his
name?
So narcos and death, and then magic realism, let's say. It's like there's no in between, but you are quite comfortably now in that in between, doing something, you know, humorous. I mean, you've aimed and set out for it, so, you know, this is a good thing. But promise me that you won't hate me forever if I criticize Bogota. I mean, but I criticize Bogota because I love Bogota and there is room for improvement.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
But I could sit here and criticize it forever, but then I could criticize any city.
Exactly.
You know, we could criticize absolutely any city that we live in and, you know, like, okay, you put weather, lack of security, etc. Yeah, well, what about, you know, London's got crap weather and the security's not great in a lot of places and stuff. So whatever, you know, I kind of feel that way towards it. But moving on, though, I just find it so fascinating. Again, these things that really appeal to me and really stand out to me about the Colombian character. The closeness of your brother Jaime and your mother. I mean, there's almost an unnatural closeness between... Is Jaime the older brother in this book?
Yeah.
The unnatural closeness between the firstborn varón, male, and the mother. It's almost unhealthy here. And I know that my mother-in-law won't listen to this, but like her closeness to her varón. It's just weird. I'm not saying it's sexual at all. I'm not going that far. But it's just weird. It's, ay, el principito, el reycito, mi amor. He's like, or, you know, I've got two husbands, my husband and my son. You're like, that's just not right. You know? but it's very much in Colombian culture. I mean, not, I think Latin culture to some extent, but Colombian. I mean, I've been 17, 18 years in Latin America, and I've never seen it as strong as here. And you pointed out it's not widely built on, but it's there, and you can tell.
Yeah, well, I don't have a brother. I have a sister.
Okay,
actually,
there you go.
So that was absolutely made up.
Yeah, but
there are some conclusions that you made on your families and what has happened, what has been going on. When you start growing up, you start looking at your parents differently, sort of analyzing them a little bit.
Yeah,
because in a way, when you're growing up and you never know who your parents are as people, you know, because they're always your parents. They're always trying to set example. So I built, when you start like around 30, you start looking at your parents differently because they start weakening. Yeah. They start getting weaker. So you need to look after them and their relationships. Yeah. Between the first male born, we live in a society that's, I mean, it's so machista. All of it is still right. I look at my father sometimes. I hope he's not listening. I'm like, how can he do this, specifically this? It gets on my nerves. But then I analyze my own behavior towards women sometimes, and I'm just, man, this is the way I've been raised. I try to think and get out of it because of it.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard to fight that because the way you've been like educated.
I think you say, you know, you get into your 30s. I'm now, I've passed the 40 mark. And that's pretty catastrophic. But yeah, your parents start becoming vulnerable.
Exactly.
And you can see the chinks in their armor, you know, because they were always the superheroes, you know, that whatever they did. And I have a small son and I promised myself that I would be different and a better father. But I hear the same phrases that my father said to me. You know, I hear myself saying to him, I can't obviously think of any now. It's only when I utter them, I'm just like, oh my God, I've become my father.
Yeah.
But this is the truth of it. But you know, that's it, isn't it? I mean, that's it, and that is visited in the novel because you talk about the aunt Carmen, if I'm not mistaken.
Aunt Carmen,
and the family ties. What are we going to do with Aunt Carmen? She's sick, but we're going out to the countryside. Well, we'll have to take her, you know. It's like,
and there's always, of course, usually the older brother, which is more mature. he or she thinks about practical stuff, practical decisions. We need to do this, and there's the younger brother or sister. They're absolutely immature. They don't know anything about it. And this is the narrator of this novel.
Who's staying at home playing the PlayStation.
He's obsessed with the...
football and girls and beer.
And with the football game, which is PES, Pro Evolution Soccer. He just wants to play that all day.
Yeah.
Exactly. He doesn't think about anything.
I've never played it.
You never played that?
I'm not really a fan of computer games, you see. I used to play a lot of football, but like you've written in there, until your knees have given out, my knees have given out. It's all over now for me. I'm never going to receive an international call-up and these things. Okay, let's get on. Let's move on to some of the meatier subjects here. It's like now. Again, we talked about it in the first. You had Frida and you had Kelly in the first segment, and then you talk. I mean, there's girls, lots of girls, and this guy's. I mean, let's say he's a player. I mean, he likes his stuff. But I love your descriptions, is because you talk about the, never getting the skinny, sad Bogotan girl, and. There's no more accurate way of describing a certain class of Bogotana girl than skinny, kind of pale, kind of sad. And it's true. Well, my wife will refer to them as having almost inverted butt bottoms because they don't have a cola or like a costeño, or they're not implanted like a paisa, or they're not sort of a bit more straight hair. And now I refer to them in conversation and have to explain myself to people as Las Ingrids, because they all kind of look like Ingrid Betancourt at some stage in their life. Yes. and it's like, oh, no, you know, who is that who just cut you off in the car? Ah, no, una Ingrid. That's how I refer to it. But when I saw this, the skinny, sad Bogotano girl, it's so true. But again, you sort of write about this, but then there's, you do make a note, and I think it's the skinny, sad Bogotana girls are of a higher social strata, and they're out of your reach in this book. And you do, as you, when you get involved with the girl Yemi, who's at nurse's college, it's clear, and it becomes clear over time that she's of several stratas below you as well. Right. So you can...
But it's not me, it's the narrator.
The narrator, let's clear this up.
Narrator in the first person, yes, which is
sorry.
Not me.
Yeah, let's get this right. This okay. is not you, the narrator. But it's very interesting because there is that play on it. And he does, you know, he doesn't treat it particularly well. It's, for him, it's light entertainment. For her, we don't really know.
I think she's in love, but this is the guy that's narrating the novel. The younger brother, really immature.
Yeah.
He likes women, obviously, but he doesn't like to work hard at getting it.
Yeah.
So although he knows he's never going to get that slight, pale Bogotan girl, because he knows he has to work for it. Like, you need to work for that.
Yes.
He just takes whatever is at hand. And Jamie, which is, of course, from a poor background, he...
Where are they from? Uzme?
She lives in Fontibon.
Oh, Fontibon, but the other friend, Julissa, another one with a yay. Yeah.
Julissa lives in Usme. Yeah, and there's the whole thing with the names.
Yeah.
The Anglo names became popular some years ago, and just, you can name your kid whatever you want. And that's sort of there's social tension, let's say, in the novel, always with a humor touch. Yeah, but. That's a part of it.
I like that. But how do you feel that, you know, like an Anglo readership not familiar with Bogota who will be able to capture this? Because I know it obviously, you know, here, long time, but and having, you know, I would say my wife is from middle class Santander, and her parents though would have been from more working class costeños.
Okay.
And so I've been able to watch the you know, through spending time with families and so on, and the feudal situation in Mombos and how people treat different families and stuff, and here as well. But an Anglo market, are they gonna tune into this?
Well, I'm betting on the power of the writing to do that for me. But it depicts a Bogota that the narrator saw at one point. Mm-hmm. We have our social tensions, you know, that our society is not as horizontal as it should be. You hear answer to your master, and it's like it's very hard, and the same families control power and stuff, and the middle class, which I'm a part of. I'm not a rich kid. Both of my parents work for their living. They try to educate us as good as they can. I didn't even go to a bilingual school.
No,
I taught myself English. I will really recommend it for someone that would like to get an overview on Bogota and Colombians. Mm. Yeah, I think that's one of the highlights of the book.
So you taught yourself English. You've written a novel in English. So you're like Joseph Conrad. You know, the Nigger of the Narcissus and all this stuff. He wrote in English, of course, being Czech. I think.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I now that I think of it, it's like, oh, well, I did this. This is fun.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know if I'm ever going to do it again. I have some books coming, but they're in Spanish. Yeah. But it was like sometimes you just as a creator need to stop thinking. If you overthink it, then you won't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just execute. Focus on the executing part. And I just wrote one day and then the next one and then the next one and things became clearer for me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have a very good editor, which is Joel Stryker. He's a known translator from Spanish to English. He looked at the manuscript and he said he'd love to work on it. And he helped me with all these prepositions, things that are beyond someone like me whose English is not his first language. So yeah, that was when you change the language, you change everything.
Yeah.
So that was definitely something.
So excellent. I'm going to pick out a few more things from the book that really that resonated with me. And it's your father's generation. I think Colombia lived off a goal and Gabo's Nobel for many years. So Gabriel Garcia Marquez's Nobel Prize for many years. So my thing is, what are we living off now here in Colombia? Because we're talking like the sort of 90s and the 80s or whatever that in that one. But what are we living off? James getting the golden boot?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
The best goal, isn't it? The best goal.
The best goal. Well, of course, two main themes of the novel are literature and football.
Yeah.
This guy is obsessed with football.
He really is.
And so am I, with every aspect of it, playing video games. And yeah, well, Colombia is pretty much lost on the international football map, or was.
Mm.
But we did a score in Chile 1962, the only Olympic goal ever scored in a World Cup. And the narrator says that his father, generation, lived off of that Olympic goal and of Garcia Marquez's novel, right? In terms of football, well, Colombia has done something. We are now not so lost in the international football map. We keep qualifying for the World Cup, so that's fine. Some people have done great things, but in terms of literature, I mean, it's Garcia Marquez. When you think about that, you read American authors and British authors all over the world, right? But what does it take from a guy, a random guy like myself from Bogota, to be read in other places? It's hard. The first world authors all over the world, but even in the market, it's like there's something really wrong with it, because if I want to see what a young Peruvians are writing, it's impossible to get their books here, or Chile or whatever. So that has to do more with what Colombia is in every term. But yeah, I mean, you just need to write it as good as you can and hopefully you get the readers.
Mm. And all of these references and the footnotes to football made me feel a little bit like Galeano's Football in Sun and Shadow.
Oh, yeah.
Because all of the sort of references, it's like 1963, someone was winning this, and then they said, and Jacobo Arbenz was being overthrown by the CIA in Guatemala.
There's a crucial moment for the narrator of the book. Mm. It's Italy, 1990, that World Cup.
Yeah.
Colombia had to be, or at least tie with the Germans. I mean, you think a country like Colombia beating Germany at anything? It's impossible. And the narrator was 12 years old at the time. And when Germany scored, following his Colombianness, he got so upset that he just turned the TV off, like I'm sure many Colombians did.
Yeah.
And then the city roared, and he turned on the TV, and then he reflects when he's 30, he says, oh man, I missed the happiest moment of my life, which is stupid. And then I think that was a highlight for Colombian football, when we didn't even, this is what a Colombian can achieve. We didn't even beat them. We tied them at the last minute, which is epic in its own way. That was a great moment even for me and my generation when we did that. That was amazing.
I can understand that. You know, I support a football team which is, you know, we're in the Premiership. We go up and we go down, we go up and we go down. And the lows are so routine that you just get used to, you know, accepting them. But the high, when it comes, you know, like a few weeks ago, Chelsea 4-2 or something, it's euphoric. And so you take it, and he's like, that is the best game I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. It doesn't matter what happens.
And when you talk about literature and sports, it's very weird that with football or soccer being the most popular sport in the world, we still don't have the great novel of it.
Mm.
And I think that's because it's hard to narrate football.
Mm.
But then again, I think the future of it, of that narrative, is when you have the amateur aspects of it, or the fans or whatever. Yeah, because like you say, all this passion that you might feel for your team, it's absolutely irrelevant for your life or any other aspect of your life. You just feel it and it's just hard. A Peruvian writer, which I admire a lot, Julio Ramon Ribeiro, said that when you don't know a sadness from a sport point of view, I mean, when you haven't been sad because your team lost, you don't know what sadness is. You need to know that aspect of like, oh shit, we lost and your life is miserable. But if you think about it, nothing definitive has happened in your life, you know? It's kind of idiotic. And I think the narrative, it's a football novel also, because the guy is obsessed with it. And I have read very few books that deal with that specifically, so... That's another aspect of it.
I think so. I want to draw it to. It's not because it's not a romantic novel like let's say Fever Pitch or something like that. Or, you know, Nick Hornby, but
which is great.
Which he weaves Arsenal in with his relationship. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to leave a question out there for my listeners, and it's described in the book. This term, and I'm not going to ask Juan Fernando to describe it, because I'm going to ask you to all go out and buy the book to understand what this means. This is a pichadorcita. Okay, for those of you out there listening, I expect you to write this on our Facebook wall. What is a pichadorcita? That is your test for this week, because I don't want to go into that. But I think it's very important that you read the book and learn what it is. A couple of things that I absolutely loved, I'm going to pull them out again, is the oppressive vivacity of the Carrera Septima, which, again, anyone who knows Bogota, and especially between like 53 and 45, it's true, especially on a Friday. And of course, this is a book about Colombianness. You know, it's four Colombians to agree on anything. You're talking about the administration meeting in your building, which is just hell. I've been through it. Also, one further thing. You've talked about specifically about the supermarket Exito on Calle 53, and you're saying it's always full. I think half of Bogota is in that Exito, and if you find it when it's empty, there are no cashiers. So the line is still 20 people long, and I just thought I could picture it. You said I decided to go to Exito, and you're like, oh, you know, it took all those people. But I want to end by reading a couple of lines to my listeners, and then we'll get a closing sort of statements from you. But it's page 114, which I found to be amongst the most accurate descriptions of Bogota that I've read in a contemporary book. Because we're always talking about the Athens of South America. We're always talking about this. But he said, I'm going to read this little bit, and it says, there are times in this city in which, for instance, you take the wrong bus and realize it only after a few blocks. Then, of course, you get out in the street. You might know where you are, or you might not. As always, there are people around, and perhaps a few businesses open, and street vendors and pedestrians and so on. Suddenly, it starts raining, pouring. Since you don't know what to do, you enter a cafe looking for shelter. You order a cup of coffee and you think about buying an overpriced umbrella. But you know it will be no good. You know it. The coffee is disgusting and you just realize you only have a high denomination bill, and once you pay, there's going to be trouble. The rain, instead of letting up, gets mightier. You ask yourself, how is this possible? Suddenly, the place gets crowded. Without asking permission to do so, a couple sits at your table. It's clear they haven't asked permission for anything in their lives. They're soaking wet. They are coarse. They are loud. Wherever they set their cups of coffee on the table, they start dripping and eventually leave a trail that nobody will clean for a number of years. It's unbearable to look at. You remain silent. The floor starts getting flooded. The man and the woman sitting at your table start laughing. And that's when it hits you. This is it. You haven't felt so helpless in your whole life, so mediocre. It rains forever. It's like 100 years of solitude, and you won't move, speak, or let go of your bag. At some point, it gets dark, and you walk out of the place. I was like, I don't know how many times this has happened to me. And it's usually on like the Calle 19, around there. And it's always a really awful cafe. And you feel you have to justify your presence there by buying a coffee. And it's been in the Greca for probably 3 days, you know. It's like, so that really struck a note with me. And I say, I congratulate you on that, because it made me laugh. And, you know, I wanted to read that out to the people. I think you've really got an image of Bogota across. As we finish up, you know, and I will say again, don't forget, April 28th at the Filbo, the Feria de Bogota, the Feria del Libro de Bogota, 2 p.m., Juan Fernando Incapié will be there presenting his book, probably giving a reading and stuff. But is there anything you typically or deliberately omitted about Bogota in this book? Because you've got a lot of stuff about it, you know, and you get a lot of stuff off your chest, but they feel, I don't know, to me, I mean, it's complete, but is there something you feel I should have put something else in there?
Well, now that you ask, well, I don't know. I think I got everything on my chest, but it's like when I'm teaching a class or giving a reading or something, I walk out of the place and I said, oh, shit, I should have said this. But in this case, I think I said everything I wanted to say at the moment. Everything about being Colombian, identity and whatever. Of course, there are my conclusions or the narrator conclusions, but I find that, for instance, when you find one Colombian, just one, he or she is going to be great, like so intelligent, well-read, a guy that knows stuff and just a great person. You say, oh, man, these Colombians are great. But that Colombian will walk one block and then find his friend, his buddy, and immediately the two of them will become retards. We don't know. I mean, from my perspective, we're just no good at working together. One Colombian is good, then he meets his buddy or his father or whatever, and it's just, oh man, these people.
Well, okay, listeners, what say you? I mean, you're a better place than many of us to have an opinion on this. One Colombian good, two Colombians bad.
Yeah, a group of Colombians is just hard. This is a personal conclusion. We still have to figure out how to work together. I think that's
reflected in a lot of areas, especially the political sphere. Yeah, let's not get started on that. Please. I've got other people lined up for political chats.
We would be here in 3 days, man.
And so I'll just finish up again. Don't forget, listeners, I'm waiting for your interpretation of the word pichadorcita. And let me take this moment to say thank you to Juan Fernando Incapié for being here on Columbia Calling, episode 224. Let me remind you that the book is called Mother Tongue, A Bogotan Story. It's very amusing, very easy to read in English, so all of you can get out there and buy it. 32,000 pesos.
32,000 pesos.
In all good bookstores in Bogota.
Yeah, it's getting there. It should be in the main ones by now.
Okay.
It should get to all of them, yes.
And if you can, the 28th of April, that's a Saturday, 2 p.m. He'll be there at the pavilion reading and signing the book.
Yeah.
So thank you.
See you there. Well, thank you.
I won't come on a Saturday. It's too many people for me. I'll come on a weekday.
Cool. So, it was fun. Thank you for having me. And I hope my accent, middle-class Bogotan, didn't bother all the Anglo people.
Thank you. Speak far better English than most, instead of truth. So that is congratulations to you. Self-taught on this one. Fascinating. Great show today. I know you guys out there have enjoyed it. And as we are on the eve of the week of Semana Santa, so please take this podcast away with you and listen to it on your holidays. The next one will come in from Mompox, where I will be quietly sweating in joy at being in the Costa for Semana Santa. That's me signing off for today, episode 224 with Juan Fernando Incapié. Thank you again for listening. Buy the book. And farewell, and tune in next week. Bye-bye.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help. So you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.